Every single day I feel
the Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never knew I'm blessed, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Welcome back. That one studio, your boy C-Rock here on the What Are You Made Of show. It's a pleasure to be here performing or sharing with you and presenting a guest that's going to share what he's made of today. J.R. Spear is in the building. He is a resilient entrepreneur and founder of Creed Consulting and Business Leaders Network. Consulting and Business Leaders Network. Survived a suicide bombing in Iraq in 2007, returning with renewed purpose. He has built multiple businesses across various industries and is dedicated to empowering small business owners with essential tools and resources. He's helped hundreds of entrepreneurs since 2017 achieve significant growth using his STEPS framework. A sought-after presenter, he captivates audience with personal stories and practical, actionable steps for entrepreneurial success. JR, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, dude. Let's get into it. We talked a little bit before the show and what you're into and focused on and all that, but like, I always like to start the show the right way, and that's with the question, what are you made of?
Yeah, so I actually want to take the journey back to my childhood, because honestly, that's what forms and shapes us to where we're at and why we get to be where we're going through. And it's a story of resilience, but also challenges. And for anyone that is listening to this, if they're out there and be like, hey, man, you know, because let me take a step back. A lot of people look at me and be like, man, he's an overnight success. You know, he didn't have it easy. He steps in and people just flock to him. But the reality is I went through hell myself to be able to get to where I'm at. And we all go through different challenges, but it's also the trials and tribulations that shape us to who we are and where we're at and where we're going to go. And I always try to say, like, we got to earn our stripes and be able to get to where we're at. And it's not that we don't go through it. It just gets easier because we learn how to navigate through problems. We learn how to have different types of conversations, get through different obstacles and things like that, because it's familiar and we recognize the smell, the shape and whatever it is, and we just know how to push through it. So from a very young age, you know, I grew up in a family owned business out of St. Louis, Missouri. And, you know, my mom always owned a martial arts school. And so since I could walk, you know, I started kicking, punching and going to classes while she's teaching aerobics and martial arts, whatever. And I was always there, and I got four sisters and we all kind of grew up in this space. And, you know, not all five of us actually adapted to the lifestyle and continue it, but three of us did. And I was a big part of it. You know, I started teaching when I was about 10 or 11 years old, and I'm this little kid leading these big classes of individuals. And I remember the first day that I actually had to step in and teach, and I was terrified because I was like, you know, I held pads for people. I took people through forms and stuff like that, but it was one very specific day. I remember my mom just being sick and wasn't able to teach, and there was no one there that she had to fill in. She's like, hey, JR, you need to go in there and do it. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And we had a pretty big school at that time. And so I went in there and I just did it. And I just fell in love with it ever since. And it was more about the people and the serving. And my mom growing up always said, like, JR doesn't know a stranger, because I would always find someone that needs help. And I always did what I can to serve them and help them and do it. And that just followed me throughout my entire journey. And yeah, I have stories of me traveling the country and competing. I was on pro kickboxing team, you know, excelled in Taekwondo and did really well with it. And then, you know, I went through some trials and tribulations as a high schooler and hanging out with the wrong crowd and doing dumb things. And so I didn't really have direction of what I wanted to do. I wasn't a fan of education and school, so I didn't want to go to college. And so I went into the military. And that's a whole nother story. But essentially, my grandmother, who was a really big, influential person in my life, took me to the recruiter's office one day and saying, hey, you're going to walk in there and you're going to sign with a branch, and I don't care what you're going to do, but you're going to change your life and your attitude now. And that's what I did. So I wasn't going to say
Hold on a second. So before you do that, I want to get into that military part, but we got to talk about, as a kid, like, what kind of stuff did you get into? Like, was it drugs and partying and that kind of thing? Or was it like, just stupid
just
stuff?
Dumb attitude. Like, it was a combination of all. You know, I started, you know, hanging out with the wrong kids and smoking too much weed and just doing dumb things. I was lazy. I was skipping school like every day. I mean, I graduated high school with a 1.2 GPA, and jeez, I didn't even think that they were going to give me a diploma. But, you know, they knew I was signed up for the military. And, you know, when I was 17, I signed up when I was 16 and was on a delayed entry program in the military. And, And so, but when I was 17, I rededicated my life to Christ and my life started changing right there. I started having new purpose, new vision about where I was going and started getting plugged into church. Went and did a missions trip before I went in the military and started getting my act straight. But the military has definitely woke me up and it really helped shape me to be a man. You know,
For the young people that might be listening, like, what do you think led you to get into the wrong crowd and then falling into all that? Like, what could have changed earlier on to prevent that?
You know, to be really honest, it's the environment that you're in. You know, my mom was a single mom with five kids and she was present, but she wasn't as involved in my dad. I would only see every other weekend. And then when I got older, there would be months that I wouldn't even go see him or talk to him. And so having, you know, it's not even from the kid's standpoint, it's from the parent's standpoint. And, you know, my mom did the best she can. So I'm not dissing her. I mean, I had a really great upbringing. I played ice hockey. I did martial arts. I played football. And so they did the best they could. But, you know, being a parent now and having four kids, I can really see the impact of a present parent that really shapes the kid. And the problem was I had too much flexibility to come in and go in when I could. And it's not like it was my mom's fault being a single mom running a business that runs at night. You know, I was always coming and going and doing what I wanted and just started hanging around dumb kids and just wanted to have fun.
So I want to point something out here. So I believe, you know, we have like this game being played in life, right? And everything in business is a game to me, because like, if you think about a game, and this is like what I'm analyzing here with this, is that you need a game always has a playing field. Right. It has a rules. It has you keep score and has boundaries.
Yeah.
And to the degree you have boundaries, you have freedom. People think that boundaries limit your freedom. But when you're doing what you were doing, and I got into it when I was about 18, by the way, and when I got to college, it was like I went on my stretch. OK, Rumspringa, as the Amish say. but the thing is that people don't realize when you have boundaries, it gives you freedom. When you were doing that stuff, you didn't feel free. It feels like you had this freedom, like to do whatever, but you weren't free. You started to get trapped. Am I right?
Oh yeah. I felt completely trapped. It's like, okay, even when I was out doing what I wanted, I knew that I would, if I got caught, you know, whether it was by my mom or whether it was by the police, I was going to get in trouble. It was just inevitable. It was going to happen one way or the other.
So boundaries are a necessity to be successful. And then, you know, like they're talking about the trap part, like, and then you got back into the church and with God. The fact of the matter is sin, right? Sin is something that keeps you trapped. And that's why we, you know, as Christians, we were thankful that we were saved, because we can ask for forgiveness and it releases that thing. So yeah, I just wanted to kind of point that out for people, because a lot of times people don't think they need boundaries and or control, and being controlled is a good thing. It gives you more freedom. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out, because I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Well, it goes a lot deeper. And I was under massive spiritual warfare and spiritual attack. And to the point of like, I remember as a child, like I would walk around with a frown on my face, just always angry. And I was a bully and didn't even know I was a bully. And to the point, like if there was a peer or someone that would say something wrong with me, like I was always using my fist, because I knew how to fight. You know, I grew up in martial arts, and yes, you learn how to use it for good. And martial arts is all about character development, things like that. But there was a period of time where I just didn't allow people to take advantage of me. And I never realized that I was that bully until I was 17. I rededicated my life, and truthfully, the Holy Spirit just kind of took over my life and changed me literally overnight. And I remember walking out of church and had a sack of weed in my pocket and threw it away in the trash can outside the church. And then I go to the school the next day, and, you know, I'm sitting in choir class, and a kid that was sitting next to me, I'll never forget his name was Josh. And I looked at him and said, "Hey, what's going on, man?" And he just jumped out of his seat. And I was like, "Why are you jumping? Why are you like so frazzled by me talking to him?" But he was just terrified that I was going to say something mean or be whatever. And it was just eye waking to me to really see that I had that type of impact on someone. But when I went through that whole transition, it was like I felt a relief. Like I never had joy. I had so much hate and anger all over me, and just wasn't a pleasant person to be around, but I wasn't a pleasant person to even want to live with, even in my own skin. And when you talk about boundaries, it's like I had no boundaries. Like I did whatever, whenever, and came and gone with my friends, and my went and call home and be gone for 4 or 5 days at a time. My mom had no clue where I'm at, and just did whatever and whenever. And so boundaries is super important to really understand. And here's the reality: as you get older as an adult, there's no one that's going to set those boundaries for you except you, especially as an entrepreneur. You know, as an entrepreneur, we have to give ourselves non-negotiables, boundaries, because that's what shapes your character and who you are. But that's also what's going to be your success. No one's going to tell you to get up out of bed to go do the work and things that got to get done. You can sleep in if you want to. You don't have to go to the gym if you don't want to. You can eat whatever you want to, but reality is you're going to suffer the consequences by the actions that you have. And so you have two choices: do this or do that. What do you want to do? So it's like you have the power to be able to be successful or not be successful, to be fat and lazy or not be fat and lazy, or be a good person or not be a good person. And, you know, it's all our choice. And everyone has the opportunity and the same choices as everyone else. It's just what you decide to do with it.
100%. That's gonna count. So then your grandmother told you got to pick some branch of the military. You're going in. And yeah. What branch did you select? And then take us from there.
Yeah, so she pulls into this recruiter's office, and you know, I'm looking straight ahead, and she tells me, it's like, hey, you're going in, but you're not coming out until you choose a branch. And you know, at this moment, I knew I would never go Army or Air Force. To me, it just, I look at that as like a lower elite, but I would never go Marine Corps at that time because they would just work too hard. And my grandfather was retired Navy, and my uncle, he was a Marine. And so I was like, okay, you know, I'll go in the Navy. You know, I'll just follow my grandfather's footsteps. He was aviation boatsman handler and stuff like that. And so that's what I'll do. Now, keep in mind, when I signed up for the military, this is before me having that transition in my faith and my life and stuff like that. So once I finished high school, I went on a missions trip, and then I went to Navy boot camp in Chicago in that August. And while I was there, I started having some reflection. It was like, you know what? I don't think the Navy is for me. And I just told a story to someone else this morning that we're in our quarters or whatnot in our company, and there's like 100 other guys in there, and we're all standing at attention in front of all of our racks, and our drill instructor comes down the center, and I walked out right in front of him without even asking anything, and I said, hey, is there any way I can switch over to the Marine Corps and not do this Navy thing? Just because I thought, I said, like, the Navy's a lot easier and not what I expected. And he didn't know what to say. And he was looking down at me, just kind of pissed off. And he was a bald head, really scary guy. And he just turned around and walked away. I was like, okay. So while I was in the service, I found out you can't switch. I didn't realize, like, I was so stupid at the time. Like, I didn't realize every branch was like its own separate thing and had its own separate contract. I just thought it was a military, you know, you sign for the military and you can do whatever. And so I found out about two jobs that you can do in the Navy and be attached to the Marine Corps. And that was either being a corpsman or being an RP. So an RP was a religious program specialist, and essentially their security for the chaplain. And so I found out, I went to the MEPS in boot camp and talking about switching my MOS into being an RP from what I was, and was able to do that. And so right out of boot camp, I went straight to different Marine training to learn how to shoot weapons and, you know, do all that stuff, and spend my whole time with the grunts in the Corps, and had my first tour at OCS in Quantico, Virginia. And then I transferred to, you know, First Marines out in Camp Pendleton and deployed to Iraq in 2006 to 2007. And I will say that deployment ultimately changed the whole trajectory of my entire life. And from, you know, physical and character standpoint and things like that, you know, we think about war and how it changes people, and it truly did change me. And just like in the bio that you said, I survived a suicide bombing at a walk-in checkpoint in Barwana, Iraq on February 7, 2007. And, you know, that's, you know, how many years, 16, 17 years ago from now?
Hey, that's my birthday, February 7th. Wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, that is the most challenging day for me. And, but if I hang out with you, I'll celebrate you. So
yeah, there we go. But Hold on a second. 2007 was when, is that when ISIS was in Iraq?
No, ISIS was after.
Okay. So what was going on in 2007? Cause obviously we went to, after 2001, we went into Afghanistan, and then what was going on in Iraq at that time?
Well, there was a ton of different things. I mean, so I was part of a MEU, which is called the Marine Expeditionary Unit. So we had a bunch of Marines that went on. We took Navy ships from San Diego and over to Iraq. And then we spread out, you know, all the whole entire task force of different cities all over Iraq. Now, I was part of HQ, so headquarters, and where we based out of Barwana, and then we had Marines in Aramadi and the Korean Village and other places, you know, surrounding the area. So in the main city where I spent most of the time, our mission was to recruit Iraqi police and train them to actually take it over, because there was so much corruption amongst the law, the law enforcement, the police that were there. I mean, to the point of, you know, they would, you know, kidnap a little boy, chop him up, put him in a box, and then hand deliver him to the father. And that was the type of stuff that was going on in the area that we're at. And so we were there to pretty much burn up the whole city and, you know, take control and do different things. And while we were there, we recruited, I think it was over 150 Iraqi police, and you know, train them up in that one little city.
How do you test the ethics level of these individuals as you're recruiting them to see how corruptible they are?
Yeah, that's a good question. Unfortunately, I wasn't part of that training development on you know, when it goes into those stats. I mean, my only job was providing security for the chaplain. So I knew my job, and I knew how to do it well, and I knew what our mission was there. But, you know, when it came to the actual recruitment stuff like that, that was way beyond my pay grade and what we found in that training. But, usually when they found the chaplain and the RP, it was someone got hurt or someone got killed. And so we were always flying around and doing the memorials and providing support and stuff like that.
And so when this happened, this bombing happened, because obviously I've never been involved with a situation where there's a bomb went off anywhere in my vicinity. Like, can you take us through that?
Yeah. So, you know, kind of set the tone early in the morning on that day. You have getting up early in the morning and look for the chaplain, and he wasn't there. And we were supposed to, we never go anywhere without each other. And he didn't even tell me where he was going, but he ended up going out to the city and patrolling the city with our CO and Sergeant Major and a couple of the Marines, and, you know, without even taking me. And that, you know, that's a problem in itself. So for my job, he's putting me at risk. So I'm trying to find out, where's he at? How can I get connected with him to be able to do it? And, you know, it's a he said, she said, whatever. I don't know why he even decided to do it, but he went down there. And so I found a convoy that went down to where that checkpoint was, and was hanging out with the Marines until we were able to reconvene. And while we were there, I was standing in the center walkway where people were coming in and out of. And, you know, it was a nice day. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of things going on, and, you know, we're communicating and laughing with the local people. I mean, not all people in the Middle East are terrorists, or they're not all bad people. So we're connecting, and I'm having a good time there, you know, hanging out with the Marines and you know, being able to communicate with a lot of local people there. And while I'm standing there, I'm with another Marine, and the chaplain's around this corner and like a grass area. And then we had a building that was right next to the Euphrates that overlooked the area that we could kind of see the long line of people wanting to come in and out of. But I couldn't see the chaplain. I knew where he was at, but I couldn't see where he was at. And it was a little while before, you know, we reconnected. And so I'm standing there, and then all of a sudden I get this, you know, think about the Bible and Moses, where you get like this audible sound. I feel like it was God talking to me in the Holy Spirit, saying, hey, you know, go check on the chaplain. And so I'm standing there, and there was this walkway that cut through these tall concrete barriers like you see on the highway, where you know, we can cross through to see people coming in or out. So I'm at the center walkway with another Marine, and as I'm hearing this voice, someone's like, oh, okay, you know, he's over there, I'm good. And I'm not listening or responding. And then it happened again. And it was like so audible that it was like right there in my face. And I was like, who in the hell is telling me to go check on the chaplain? And it felt like someone was yelling at me. And I didn't respond again. I was just really confused. And then by the third or fourth time, I started feeling like nauseous, like sick. Like I was getting ready to throw up. I was like, oh crap. You know, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if you ever passed out, but I started feeling flush, like all the blood rushing from my head, started getting real sweaty. I have my flak, my Kevlar, got my rifle in front of me, and got, you know, I'm fully loaded. And I was like, what the heck is going on with me? I was feeling completely fine all day. So once I started feeling sick and, you know, and feeling like, hey, you know, you check on the chaplain again, I'm walking down. And as I'm walking, my sergeant major is passing right by me. And, you know, just like any other young enlisted individual, I look up and greet my senior personnel, and I make this turn, and Sergeant Major, who was end up standing right next to where I was at, next to David Emery. And at the walking area, there was a guy walking in, and he was strapped with C4, lifted his arms and blew himself up. And I literally was maybe 7 feet from this guy that killed himself. And my Sergeant Major who I just passed, and he was standing right where I was at. He ended up dying. And David Emery, the Marine that I was next to, lost both of his legs and had a bunch of other issues. And then we lost, you know, a couple more people, and there were a lot of injuries. And
so did this guy have a jacket on? It was underneath his jacket, or you could actually see it on him?
No, I didn't see it at all. So he had a jacket or clothes. No, I didn't see the bomb or nothing. It wasn't through until investigation, knowing where the bomb actually went off and then where we're standing. But
gotcha.
To kind of put in perspective how strong this blast was, we had something called HESCO, which was like these cloth barriers that we stuffed with dirt that would take impact of blast that we used to separate different walls. There was a pack of cigarettes that was penetrated inside of this cloth filled with dirt that didn't even bend the cigarette, and it was in probably about a full inch.
Wow.
And that's how strong that blast was. But he was strapped with shrapnel and, you know, went off, and this entire day could be a complete movie. And it was the biggest bloodbath that I experienced while I was there. And it was horrific. I mean, anytime you lose your sergeant major.
How many people died?
So we lost three of our own. And then there was a bunch of other local people that were in that line that ended up dying. And then there was a ton more injuries, like really bad injuries that took place.
And so when it went off, you remember, like, it was just like was it a sound, or you could feel?
Well, it threw me. So I was thrown, and I was left unconscious, and I had no clue what was going on. And so when the blast happened, I was thrown to the ground. And once I started making sense of like where I was at, straight tunnel vision, everything to my left and right was fully cloudy. And I can see just maybe within a foot sideways in front of me from there. And then I had like straight ringing the whole right side of my face. I didn't know if I had my limbs or nothing, because my whole right side of my body is completely numb. I mean, even today, I don't have full rotation with my right arm without pain. The right side of my face, I still have numbness. So like if you would, you know, touch your face on one side or the other, very different sensations for me. Mm-hmm. Even when I talk, I get my voice echoes on my right side of my ear as I talk to you. So the impact that I took was all my whole right side. But I had one little speck of blood in the back of my flak that, you know, where, you know, even the chaplain had, you know, flesh and body parts from other people that was all over his uniform and flak and everything like that. And so I was literally covered. And I'll tell you something that's going to make everyone listening give you guys goosebumps and chills. But I was the closest one to the blast that happened. And then so when I finally came to it, I saw the chaplain, and I'm crawling to the ground because I thought it was I didn't know it was a suicide bombing. I thought it was like mortars coming in. And so we didn't know if there was more mortars that were flying over or whatever. It was just a big black bomb that went off. And my only reaction was to get the chaplain to safety. And we had the building that was next to us, that kind of like a garage type feel. And I saw it was either my first sergeant or my gunny that was waving. I couldn't hear anything. And so I just knew that where he was at, I can get under shelter. So I grabbed the chaplain under his flak, and I'm standing below the ground and pulling him and dragging him for about 25 to 50 yards to get under that safety. And then until we were able to assess the area for what it was. But the crazy part about that whole thing was I didn't understand what was going on at the time. I'm like, why did God save me during that moment? Well, we got back from that happened February 7th, 07. We got back from deployment May 31st of that same year. And when I saw my mom, she asked me, she said, hey, did something happen while you're overseas? And I was like, well, yeah, you know, I saw a lot. You know, that wasn't my only bomb that I saw. I mean, that was the one that impacted my life the most. But yeah, I saw a lot, and you know, there was a heck. You know, it's a war. You know, you go through things, and you see things, and there's death, and there's a lot of stuff that happens. And but she said that in that January or the month prior, or a few weeks prior, she was at church, and there was a guest speaker, and he was prophesying over it, and then he like out of the whole crowd, and there was a pretty. We went to a pretty big church. He looked at her and was like, and asked her questions like, "Hey, do you have a child or a son that's overseas?" And in Iraq right now. And she said, yeah, my son's over there. She says, I don't want to scare you, but you know, something really bad is getting ready to happen, but he's going to be surrounded by 1,000 angels and not be touched. And the verse that I kept on me, and I prayed even walking, like driving down there in the convoy, anytime I got behind a Humvee, I always memorized and prayed Psalm 91. And if you don't know what Psalm 91 is, there's a big piece of the verse that says 1,000 may fall at your side and 10,000 your right hand, but it shall not be touched. And that's exactly what happened, because there's no reason why I was able to stand up and walk away with minimum injuries compared to, you know, the death of the sergeant major and even Emery that lost both of his legs and all the other people that, you know, suffered substantial.
Wow. Did any shrapnel hit you?
No.
Yeah, that's the, it's definitely phenomenal and amazing.
And, I had a speck of blood on, it was like a pin drop in the back of my flak. That's all that there was.
So after that, obviously you go through situations where you feel guilty, survivor's guilt, all this, right? But really also I can imagine, and if you can take us through this part, it feels like, oh, wait a minute, God put me here for a reason, and I can't let him down. And the reason I ask you this, JR, is because I wake up every morning. I don't have survivor guilt, but I've been through a lot of things where people committed suicide in my family and different things I've seen, right? And I just feel like God created us to do something, and I don't want to let God down. So every morning I'm obsessed with serving my purpose and mission that God gave me. So I can imagine going through what you did. Is that something that you feel like you've picked up this mission that you've been given, and now you just got to do it?
You know, at first I had a lot of anger, and for years, and I didn't understand. And you know, there was a period of time where I was very suicidal and almost pulled the trigger, and, you know, not by gun, but, you know, I was getting ready to walk off the bridge of a major highway and was just done with it. And, so when it comes to survival guilt, you know, I'm a prime example of it. And, you know, I wonder, it's like, why my sergeant major, he was retiring that May, like that May after 30 years or whatever it was of getting out. He spent his whole life giving back to the country, and yet he paid the ultimate sacrifice. And so for me, yeah, you know, having that survivor's guilt and going back to your question, it wasn't until years later where I started really reflecting, was like, how can I turn this for good? And I never told anyone that story until I think it was probably 2016. And like, there were a few people, like my wife, like she knows the story and a couple of close friends, but publicly and speaking from stages and doing different things. And even in my book that I have and sharing a little bit, it was hard to even open up. I mean, the first time I spoke about my story on stage, I broke down and I just could not keep myself controlled. And it was just like, my body just went back there and I was just shut down and complete tears on the stage and shaking. And it just took me to the place and like relived it and just didn't know what to do. I mean, I was picking up body parts. I mean, carry the guy's head around and, you know, throwing it in a trash bag and arms and torsos and everything you could imagine. I mean, when I say it was a bloodbath, it was a bloodbath, and I was highly involved in every piece of it. But it got to a point where I was like, you know, it was a friend of mine in a Bible study. He was like, Jerry, you need to tell your story. And I was like, what does my story have anything to do with anyone else? And how would it even be good? And because anytime I would share it, like in a small group or Bible study or a group of men, like they would all be in tears. Like they'd be crying. I was like, wow. Okay. Yeah. To me, I could tell a story and like tell my story like it was just nothing. It was like, oh yeah, you know, I brush it off because, you know, they call them dark jokes or whatever like that. Like it was my dark joke and that I can say, and I can speak it like it's nothing. And like someone blowing their head off or someone doing whatever, like to me, like there was no emotional tie. I was so emotionally detached from everything, from me. And it would be like a joke. It would be like laughing and it's like, oh yeah, you know, this person committed suicide and kill himself or whatever. And didn't realize how much it would affect people. And like when I first got back from Iraq, I immediately went to college, and it was actually, I went to Bible college for one semester. And while I was there, I was at a lunch table with a guy that recently got out of the Marine Corps, and he was from and went to Fallujah. And we're sitting there at lunch around the table, and we're just sharing war stories, and we're just like, it's, you know, it's normal guy talk, and we're laughing, we're having fun, and we are so into what we were talking about for probably 2 hours that once we finally like started to, you know, stop chatting, we looked around us, there was probably 10 other people around us just like listening, and they're all like in tears, and we're like, whoa, what's going on? Like we didn't even realize that people were just listening to us and with our stories and what's going on. But 2016, wow. I started sharing my story and started talking about it. And I was like, okay, well, God, how can I use this for good? But then I started taking my experiences from the date that, you know, from childhood of my martial arts to leading and to being training in the military to prepare me for that day that we got ambushed that led me to where I'm at today. And how was I able to respond without thinking during that bombing to grab the chaplain and put him under safety without any thought of what I needed to do? And that goes back to even entrepreneurship and business or in life, is people settle for easy and they want immediate results now. They want to hit a red button and be like, okay, print me some cash. Hey, you know what? Hit a red button, lose 50 pounds. Hit a red button, fix the solution, whatever it may be. Give me that big house. Give me whatever. Pay this debt, pay these bills. But they're not thinking about the things that leads them to what's actually going to prepare them. And a talk that I always have is learning to be prepared for the day that you get ambushed. Because that was my ambush. But I was able to respond without thinking when that bomb went off. And it was a big bomb. But when that bomb went off, my mission, the only thing I was trained to do was protect that chaplain. So I grabbed him, got underneath that shelter, was able to move, was able to respond, react, and was able to patrol the area with the other Marines to make sure there was no other danger that was coming in so that we can assess, move, and attack. And in business and in life, it's no different. We have to be able to assess, you know, identify the key threats in our life. Then we needed to create that plan that's going to help execute it. And then that E is the execution, the action. What are we going to do to actually execute that mission and that plan that we need to do to make sure that we're ready and prepared? Because if you think that you're ready for, let's just say, huge success, like for you, you've been very blessed for what you did, but you had to learn and go through. I guarantee you that you went through trials and tribulations to be able to do it. But if you go through those same trials that messed you up in the past, I'm sure it would be a lot easier for you to navigate through it because you've been through it once.
It's like night and day difference. Like it used to be the end of the world.
But when we go through it now, it feels like death. It's like, I'm never going to get this. It's like you're breaking up with your first girlfriend. Yeah. It's like you think it's the end of the world.
So something as little as a customer, like, you know, like just being a pain in the butt customer. And you're just like, I don't want to work with this customer. But before we would like, oh, we're not going to give them their money back. We got to solve this. And that. And sometimes customers but simple things like that. And would be just like, oh, it'd ruin your day and all this other stuff. Here's the thing, JR, what you're saying is some people want millions of dollars. They want success. They want these relationships, this and that. But if they were to have it right now, they're not ready for it. And some people like
100%
win the lottery. They get something that, you know, a lot of these crypto guys, like they hit all of a sudden and it ruined their lives. You know, not only did they go broke, maybe they got a drug problem all of a sudden. They did just, you know, and so success needs to be prepared for is what you're talking about.
I'm a firm believer that God's not going to give you what you're not prepared to handle. And you got to be able to handle the small things before you can handle the big things. And that is when it comes to money, big business, big problems, because the reality is when you have a bigger business means bigger problems. You have to know how to be emotionally intelligent to be able to solve through and navigate through those bigger problems, be able to help other people or for you to even get through it.
100%.
You know, you look at someone like Steve Jobs or Walt Disney or Melton Hershey or like, you know, anyone, Elon Musk. And you ask how are they able to run their business? And they look so
stoic,
perfectly like normal and just navigate through there is because they adapted emotional intelligence that prepare them for those situations. And just like a president has to be emotionally intelligent to be able to respond and to be able to do the things that they do. Cause if not, they'll be reacting off of emotion versus logic. And so, you know, I'm a good example of it. It's like even just a few years ago, or let's just say 5 years ago, I wanted to have these big dreams and being at a certain place financially in my business and working with this many clients. But the truth is, I look back, if I had what I have now back then, I would have totally screwed it up because I had no clue how to even manage it. But now it's like, I know, I mean, here's a simple, let's talk to small business owners. Here's the simple formula for scaling any business. Because people immediately say, hey, you know what? I want to help people with basket weaving and they want to scale basket weaving business. But they don't know the process of scalability. Scalability is learning to create the systems and processes that allows you to delegate so you can eliminate you from the process so you can actually participate in the business. People want to go from, I started a business, to now I want to participate and have fun. But you haven't created the things. Hey, they go from starting a business to, in order for me to have bigger business, I need to have more people. Great. Go get more people to help you. But if you didn't create those systems and processes that's going to train those people, you're going to be stuck and then in a bigger mess because now you're being pulled away from what you need to do to be able to help these people that probably are not a good fit to be able to do the next thing.
You
so create that system
failure.
And process first. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. But people want to go from A to Z without doing anything in between. So when I say being prepared for the ambush or earning your stripes is like you got to do the steps and the things that it takes that's going to lead you to bigger things later on. And even me, like I know I'm not prepared for certain things that God has me for, but I recognize that now. And I know he's preparing me for a bigger ambush later on. And I'm going to be ready for it. And I'm just kind of going through the journey. And to me, I'm in a much different emotional standpoint and than when I was even just a few years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and be able to step into that place where he says, hey, JR, I need you to go. I'm going to be ready and I'm going to be able to go where I couldn't do that before.
I love it, man. Yeah, and you have a podcast, JR. As we wrap up here, we're running over, but your story was just so awesome. I don't want to cut you short because I wanted to hear it. But real quick here on the podcast thing, what has podcasting done for you and your business?
You know, I could say talk about the business that it brought, but the reality is it gave me an opportunity to serve. And you know, our mission within Business Leaders Network is really to build a community of emotionally intelligent servant leaders. And what I love about the podcasting is giving people that voice. It's finding amazing people that have stories that can share to make a bigger impact and help other small business owners, get through those trials and tribulations for there. And not just that, when you have a tool, like a great example for you, when you have a tool to be able to connect with people that you never thought you would gain attention of before. So you have something that you can invite them to and say, hey, you know what? I have an awesome podcast that is reaching this many people. I would love to bring your story on there. It's a much easier ask than saying, hey, you know what? Let me talk to you about my products and services. And so I can sell you what I got. Because when you invite someone to your platform to share with your network, you are giving them more value than any money could ever provide, because you're giving them a voice and you're giving them a network to be able to share what that is. And has given you an opportunity to now serve them. But not just that, when you serve one person, don't you think they want to serve you back?
100%.
All goes in a big circle. So 100%. What podcasting has done for me, it has put me in touch with some high-level entrepreneurs that I would never have been able to be in contact with, because I've been able to serve them. And in return, I get opportunities like this, where I get to be on the other people's shows and other people's networks. I've been on big stages and be able to teach and be able to lead and things like that. And for me, it's going and serving where God's called me to be. And if I can be a good vessel for that, then I'm going to go. But podcasting has been, I'm a firm believer that every entrepreneur needs to have a podcast, because it is the one platform that's free that you can reach millions and billions of people around the world. And not just that, it's not even just for you, but when you use it as a platform to serve other people, there's no better way. Because you can repurpose this on all social media sites, Facebook, yep. Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, whatever. You can put it on all podcasts and channels. You can use it for marketing. You can use it for intros that stages or whatever, but you never know who's going to see that. And you never know when that message is going to resonate with the right person at the right time. And that could definitely pull them off the ledge to get to the next place where they need to go.
Nail on the head, brother. Nail on the head. JR Spear, everybody. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here, man.
Yeah. Well, no, thank you for the opportunity to be on your platform.
I appreciate you sharing and being vulnerable and transparent. And I'm hoping that somebody got a message here and can understand that there's preparation taking place, and don't rush into the results. Just be willing to go through the preparation, you know? And the other thing I got from you is do the hard things, like lean into the hard things, man.
Yeah.
To make your life easier. So hang tight while I wrap this up, JR. Hey guys, listen, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate all of you. Please go rate, subscribe. You know the routine. Help me out. That gives the energy back for the energy that we put out today. And I really appreciate that. And until next time, it's your boy C-Rock signing off from That One Studio on the What Are You Made Of Show. Until next time, be that one.
Music licensing.